to the very latest contemporary bluegrass, Brown's Round brings all varieties of bluegrass music to you. Hosted by Darwin Davidson, with lots of help from Karen Mulford, Marilyn Ryan, Paul Anderson, and other hosts, it all happens every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on Community Radio. That's WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online at WERU.org. We look forward to seeing you every Thursday.
Support for WERU comes from Penobscot Bay Press, committed to providing community news and information, publishing three weekly newspapers, the Weekly Packet, Island Advantages, and the Castine Patriot, as well as the Bay Community Register, the Summer Seasonal Guide, and more. Also on the web at penobscotbaypress.com.
It's about 30 seconds before the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to be debuting a brand new program this morning at 10 o'clock. Bookworms is coming to you with Brooke Minner. It's coming your way right after a quick look at the weather. Sunny today with a high near 61, north winds 3 to 6. Tonight, clear with a low around 37, another chilly one. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 60 again. Warm weather is still with us. Good to see that. And Friday, increasing clouds Friday night, mostly cloudy on Saturday. And that Saturday temperature is going to be 67. Stay tuned now for Bookworms.
Good morning and welcome to Bookworm. My name is Brooke Minner. This is a monthly radio book club. Each month we will welcome a different author. We'll talk about their work and take your questions. This month, it's our very first show, and I'm excited to be here. And we're starting with a special guest. Chuck Robinson is here. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. So Chuck has just finished a cross-country bike ride, but it has a book connection. So tell us what you're doing.
Well, I just finished in Bar Harbor yesterday. I began a ride 2 years ago from Bellingham, Washington. And about 1,480 miles into the ride, a couple of dogs decided they needed to herd me and knocked me down, and I broke ribs, and that ended that part of the ride. So I went back to that spot on September 1st and began the ride. And I'm raising money for three foundations, the Whatcom Community Foundation, which is the county I live in back in Washington State, Whatcom Community College Foundation, and the one that has the book connection is the Book Industry Charitable Foundation, which provides money and other kinds of help to people who work in bookstores when they're having some severe financial crisis.
Yeah, so that's really interesting, and congratulations
Thank
on
you.
Finishing your ride.
Thank you.
Impressive, especially since the first ride ended in injury.
Right.
Right, tragedy. But I'm glad you're okay.
Thank you. So
tell us more about the Book Industry Charitable Foundation. I had never heard about that.
Well, it was founded a number of years ago when Borders bookstores were still around, and it was founded by employees of the company because most people in retail don't make a lot of money, and some sudden crisis in their life could put them in some severe financial crisis at the same time. So it could be a health issue. It could be something that happens within the family, all sorts of things that could cause that to happen. Most recently, the big deals have been the hurricanes in Texas and Florida left a number of booksellers homeless, a couple of people who lost homes and their possessions. And with the fires in California, we've just heard that there at least one bookseller has lost a home out there to the fires. And BINC, as it's referred to, the Book Industry Charitable Foundation, steps in and tries to help with immediate needs. They certainly can't cover all the costs of mm-hmm. everything involved, but try to helping people as quickly as they can.
Yeah, that's really great. And so I would assume that a lot of people who work in the bookselling industry either own their own small businesses or they're an employee of a small business. And so when there's a sudden tragedy, there's maybe not deep pockets.
That's right. Yeah. And now most of the, it will cover anyone who's working in bookstores in the U.S. And of course, there are many independent small bookstores, and you're absolutely right. There wouldn't be deep pockets there to be able to help people in the case of losing a home, even losing a vehicle or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And so you yourself used to own an independent bookstore.
My wife and I did. That's true.
And it sounds like you've recently sort of transitioned that. Tell me what's going on with Village Books now.
Sure. Well, Dee and I started the bookstore in 1980, in June of 1980. So 37 and a half years later, we sold it to three of our employees. Paul Hansen, Kelly Everett, and Sarah Hutton are the three new owners of it, and they're doing very well. They will run that store incredibly well, and it was important to us for that store to continue.
That's
and actually,
great.
There are two stores. There's one in Bellingham and one in a small town of Linden, about 20 miles north.
That's great. And how would you say that the independent bookstore business generally is going?
Well, the interesting thing is, contrary to some things you might hear or the rumors in the business, for the last 8 years, there's been a net increase in independent bookstores. So there are new stores opening up by people who are just starting stores. There are stores that are making transitions like ours. Mm-hmm. For instance, there was a time not many years ago when those of us who had been in the business for a while worried that there would not be a new generation of booksellers. And fortunately, they've come along. The other thing that's happened, there's a lot of bookstores that have been around for a while that are opening up second or third stores. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a pretty common thing around the country recently, and sometimes in places that have been underserved and not had bookstores, or where bookstores were in the past and have gone away. So that's been a pretty healthy change in the book business over the last, I think we're probably in the ninth year now of net increase of independent stores.
Well, that's great. And I think you're right. That's a kind of a misperception that everybody just buys their books online and doesn't visit a bookstore. And so I'm a librarian. I'm the library director of the Brooksville Library here on the coast of Maine. And we're seeing the same trend in libraries, which is an increased use and a more creative use, too. And I wonder if that's also happening in bookstores, as far as there are things happening there beyond just people going in and shopping for
books. Absolutely. There have been, I mean, in the years that we had our store, so many things changed in the store. I mean, we've always been sort of a community center. We attempted from the beginning to be that. Mm-hmm. But now the store does about 350 author events a year.
Wow.
Which is a lot, obviously. And there's a lot of other kinds of interactions, other kinds of activities happening in the mm-hmm. store. Store also sells a lot of things that are not books anymore. And, you know, when we started out in the business in 1980, if a bookstore sold 10% of what it sold was not books, that was pretty unusual. And now if you're not selling something up above 25%, you're probably not going to stick around very long.
Yeah,
you know?
That's very interesting. And I think we see that here. We are blessed on the coast of Maine to have many wonderful independent bookstores.
That's great.
And the bookstore in my hometown also sells wine. So how convenient. My two favorite things.
It's a great connection.
It is a great connection. Great. Well, so you have finished your ride.
I did.
Raised a lot of money. And it sounds like you also got some matching donations from some authors there.
A couple I can mention. Garth Stein, who wrote The Art of Racing in the Rain. I had sent Garth an email we've been friends for some years, and sent him an email asking if he would match my donation. And he wrote back right away and said yes. And he said, and by the way, Chuck, you wouldn't have had to ride all that distance. I would have donated anyway.
Very nice.
Rick Steves, who does the travel programs mm-hmm. and all the travel books, has also matched the donation. Steve Martini, who writes legal thrillers, is mm-hmm. Lives in Bellingham and made a very generous donation. Jim Lynch, who does books set in the Northwest, and also has made a very generous donation. So a number of authors, and I'm hoping others may join in as well. I'm hoping there will mm-hmm. still be some donations come in. But I think with Bink, as of yesterday, I know the total for the Book Industry Charitable Foundation was over $12,000.
Wow, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's great. So what's up next for you?
That's a really good question. I took a picture of me yesterday supposedly throwing my bike into the ocean, but I won't do that. I'm probably not going to do any long rides soon. Mm-hmm. I'll still ride. I enjoy riding a lot. I'm working with nonprofits and small businesses now and doing some consulting. And I've been involved with a lot of nonprofits over the years, and so doing some work with them when I get home as well.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you were passing through East Orland on this day when I happened to be debuting a show about books. What a good coincidence. Yeah, and thanks so much for coming by.
You're welcome, and great luck with the program.
Thank you so much. Chuck Robinson, who has just finished a cross-country bike ride, raising money for several charities, including the Book Industry Charitable Foundation. We're going to take a quick musical break, and then we will return with our author guest, Jillian French. So welcome back to Bookworm. My name is Brooke Minner. I am the director of the Brooksville Free Public Library here on the coast of Maine, and this is a monthly live radio book discussion call-in show. That's too many words to describe it. My guest this month is Jillian French. Welcome, Jillian.
Thank you.
And Jillian lives in Stockton Springs, right?
I actually live in Herman now.
Oh, sorry about that. We should have clarified that before we were on the air. But lives locally and is the author of several young adult novels and a new one coming up. I had learned about Jillian at my local bookstore, actually, in Bucksport. And I don't typically read young adult books, but the owner of Bookstacks kept telling me how wonderful your book Grit was and finally convinced me to buy a copy. So yay for independent booksellers.
Absolutely.
Who can really introduce readers to new authors. So I bought the book this summer and I couldn't put it down. It's a page turner, and I'm so happy that you could join me on my inaugural show.
Yes, I'm so glad to be here, and thank you for reading.
Sure, of course. So I was thinking maybe we would open by having you kind of just set the book up and read the first couple of paragraphs, just to kind of set the scene, because, I think it gives a good setup.
Absolutely. This is chapter one of Grit. I swore I wouldn't come back here this summer, not to Mrs. Wardwell's foghorn voice and blisters the size of nickels. But when I went down to Goodrow's takeout on the last day of school and asked for an application, do you know what Mr. Goodrow said?
Sorry, honey pie. This is a family business.
Honey pie? Hell, I could sling Rocky Road faster than his girls. I'd always offer Jimmy's. They're wicked tight with Jimmy's at Goodrow's. Anyway, it's Friday, July 28th, opening day of wild blueberry season all across eastern Maine, and my sister Mags and I are back in the Barrens for the harvest. The sun looks swollen and hazy, but I'll be all right, as long as I've got my straw cowgirl hat and my SPF 50.
That's great. So Grit is set here on the coast of Maine, takes place over the course of a summer, and wondering if you grew up here in Maine and what made you decide to set your book here.
I did grow up here in Maine. I'm a native. I grew up right across the river in Sandy Point. And when I would go with my mother to Ellsworth, we would drive past the Blueberry Barrens in Orland, and I would see the rakers out there every August and just be so curious about these people, because it would just be people from all walks of life. It just made me wonder what made some of these people come back year after year to do the harvest here in tiny little Orland, Maine. And so that really was the inspiration behind this book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. So in researching the book, did you, because there's a lot of details really about the process of raking blueberries and how difficult that is and how people are paid, many things that I didn't know, even though I've lived here in Maine for quite a while. Did you talk with blueberry rakers? Did you rake any yourself?
I did not. I have yet to rake them myself. but I did talk to my older brother, who did rake when he was a teenager. And he was a good source of information. And I also contacted David Yarborough at the University of Maine. And he was really helpful. He's an expert on wild blueberries. And he was really helpful, provided some information that I needed. And it was really those two pieces coming together that gave me the background information that was vital to the book.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's great. And so the book includes, it's set in a fictional town, but there are references to real towns that are around here, Ellsworth, Bucksport, maybe some others, and also references to places, restaurants, and different sorts of things that are feel very familiar if you live here on the coast of Maine. And I'm wondering, how did you choose what local details to include and sort of how close to reality you wanted it to be? Because it's kind of a mixture of fiction and nonfiction in that sense.
It is. It is a mixture, and you kind of have to walk that line between making the town the place that you need it to be for the events that you're planning mm-hmm. to have take place in the plot, and adding that touch of authenticity that's really important to you to provide that sense of place. I try to just sort of drop little nuggets here and there that local people would pick up on, but it wouldn't be absolutely necessary for any reader to know in order to appreciate the story.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And if you had never been to Maine and you read Grit, you would get a sense of a particular type of Maine, sort of Maine in the summer and the experiences of kind of the working poor, actually, in many cases, in many characters in the book, which we'll get to. So the story centers on three teenage girls who are in their like late teens, I guess, young adults almost. Darcy, who is the main character and the narrator of the book, and her sister, Mags, and their cousin, Nell. And one of the things that I really liked about the book was the way that the three characters, the three girls, kind of represented three different ways of being a girl. And I wondered if that was intentional on your part, and if you could just talk a little bit about how you developed them individually, although they are connected, they're family, but they're very distinct characters.
Yes, it was important to me to show three different ways, like you said, of being a girl, three different ways of perceiving your role in the world based on gender. And I really wanted to have Darcy, who is our protagonist, be the girl with a bad reputation. And, you know, we all went to school with at least one girl who had that reputation. And I wanted to kind of get deeper into that girl's head. And so that was why I chose her to be the protagonist, to see there's more underneath and you really don't know what's going on behind all those rumors. And then her sister, Mags, who is older, she's really the responsible girl who knows who she is and has never really needed anybody to guide her. And so I wanted the sisters to be different and this older sister to really be kind of feeling some frustration with the younger. That's why she just can't work her stuff out. And then Nell, the cousin who's more innocent and very sweet, and how that can almost put you in a worse position in some ways with the various people you come in contact with in your life, people who will try to take advantage of that. I wanted to look at all three.
Yeah, and it's very interesting the way that they interact with one another. They're close and they're friends, and yet they are very different. I wondered if you could say a little bit more. Darcy, who does sort of have this kind of rebel or sort of bad girl reputation, but one that she doesn't necessarily shy away from either, and makes, you know, plenty of choices along the way that kind of give fodder to the rumors and things about her. So maybe could you just talk a little bit more about developing her as a character and how you thought about the ways that teenage girls kind of have to walk a line between a good and bad girl?
Yes. It was tough at times because I am more of a Mags myself. And so I tried to have her do some things in the book, make some choices that would make me want to smack her upside the head and say, what are you thinking? You know, but writing this book, I wanted to kind of show this is what she's thinking. This is why she's doing this. She's feeling desperate, or she's feeling like nobody really sees her. And so she is seizing these opportunities, whether it's going out with the wrong guy who she knows is no good, or whether it's staying out too late, drinking too much. This is all her sort of trying to reach out and understand her world. And unfortunately, it can often be self-destructive to her.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. So the other two women that are kind of very different characters but also related in the book are the two mothers, so Darcy and Mag's mother and then Nell's mom. And we should say also that the families live on the same property or next door to one another.
Yes.
So there's close proximity and they are related. So talk a little bit about the two moms and how they are different and represent sort of different ways of being a parent, and also they're both single parents.
Yes. I wanted to sort of deepen that sister relationship by showing the two grown sisters, Mom and Aunt Libby, who do still essentially live together. They see each other every single day. And how they are very different, like Darcy and Mags, and the way they raise their children is different. And it was important to me to have the disapproving figure in Aunt Libby, who's there, always sort of in the background, sort of underlining Darcy's destructive behavior and always there to look down on her and make some sort of negative comment. And Mom, who hasn't led an easy life and is often sort of reticent, but she's supportive. She's there for her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to kind of show that you don't have to be the perfect suburban soccer mom to be a good mom and to support your child through the difficult teen years.
Mm-hmm. And then, in fact, you know, Nell's mother, who is very protective, and I think Nell is 19,
yes.
So, I mean, she's, you know, practically an adult. And I remember at one point in the book, they're going out and, you know, her mother says she has to be home at 8:30. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty strict.
Yeah.
But without giving too much away, in fact, you know, Nell, who is being watched over like a hawk, has really got herself into some difficult situations that she doesn't know how to get out of. And so I think it's also sort of a comment on the type of parent that you are or perceive yourself to be and how that's actually playing out for your child. Maybe not always the way you expect.
Yes.
And so you're a parent.
Yes.
Yourself. You have sons or daughters?
Sons, yes. Two sons.
Two sons. Uh-huh. And are they in their teen years?
They are not. They're very little. My older is 3 and my younger is 8 months. And so I haven't gotten into that yet myself. I have yet to dive in, but it's coming. So
it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that I was thinking about as I read the book is, you know, these two families and some of the other kids that are in the book, some of the other characters are very much kind of working class poor in Maine, which is,
yes,
of course, something that very much exists here in rural Maine and probably all over the country. And I was thinking, you know, there's a lot of different groups of people in Maine, especially in the summertime when this book is set.
Yes.
And I wondered why you chose to focus on them. And there's really, I don't think there's a summer person in the book, at least not one that I can remember. And so, you know, was that intentional? And does that come from your own experience or sort of why them?
Yes, it does come from my own experience. That's, you know, who my family was, you know, working class Mainers. And I wanted to show a different side of Maine that you often don't see in movies and books. You usually see seaside town, a lot of wealth, and then a few, you know, crusty sea captain types, you know. And I wanted to show there's a whole other part of the state that isn't right on the ocean. And I wanted to show, you know, people who are struggling to make a living because there is not a lot of work in this state.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was why I came from that angle. I just thought it was an important story to tell and just an important picture to show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it does really show that, you know, the girls are... Darcy's picking blueberries to be able to buy a junky car, you know, for instance. And so there is not family money there that's necessarily going to do that for her.
Yeah.
So the book really centers on a kind of mystery, really, that another girl, Rhiannon, has gone missing the summer before. And, you know, we don't want to give anything away because we hope if you've not already that you will read the book. But there are a lot of really dark themes that come up for these kids. And I wonder if you can just talk about how you decided to kind of really get into Darcy's, you know, 17-year-old mind and tackle some of these things that are pretty serious and pretty real and absolutely do exist for teenagers, but you and I are not teenagers. And so, you know, what kinds of research you did for that or conversations or how you just sort of remembered what that was like to be a late teenager who was maybe dealing with some heavy stuff.
Yes, I try to tap into, well, this is not my autobiography to any extent. I try to tap into my own memories of what a dark time that was. I think it just is. I mean, the best years of your lives is something that people say, and I don't think it's true for hardly anyone. I think it's the hardest time. Mm-hmm. And if you yourself didn't go through something truly terrible in that time, then you knew somebody who did. And I felt like it's so, so important to have YA books that show that. One thing that Stephen King says in his book on writing is that there's a lot of things you can do with writing, but you can't lie. you have to tell the truth, your truth, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's just some of the best advice out there. And I tried to follow that. I hope that teens see a little piece of themselves somewhere in this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that because the characters are kind of approaching their lives in different ways and from different angles, there is sort of, I think most people could find at least a bit of their teenage experience. You know, one of the things that I thought as I was reading, it really did remind me of being, you know, junior, senior in high school, which is frankly not a time I think that much about anymore. You know, it feels like a long time ago to me. And you forget, or I had forgotten, how much is going on in teenagers' lives that the adults around them don't know about. Yes. Which is kind of scary as a parent myself, but the book really nails that, you know, and I think you did such a good job of reminding us of those times.
Thank you. I was really hoping, because it was so true for me. There are things you just cannot tell your parents. You just can't. And for various reasons, it often has nothing to do with whether or not they're approachable. It's just that there's embarrassment there. There's wanting your own sense of privacy. You don't mm-hmm. want that exposed to your home life. That's a different world from mm-hmm. your life with your peers and mm-hmm. school. And yeah, I think as parents, it's scary to think about, but you've got to keep it there that maybe you aren't seeing everything. Maybe there are things going underneath. And even if it's just asking them repeatedly, even if they just say they don't want to talk about it, or if they just say that they want you to leave them alone, just make sure you keep asking.
Mm-hmm.
They will know that you're there.
Yeah. Yeah. And knowing, too, that there probably are things that you don't know about, and you have to sort of be ready to release that, I guess, as your kids get older.
Yeah.
So one of the other kind of a smaller theme, but something that I was interested in the book is there is earlier in the story a betrayal, really, between Rhiannon and Darcy, who were good friends, but by the time the book has opened, Rhiannon is missing and they are no longer good friends. And that really reminded me of things that happened both to me and around me when I was younger. And I think, although I don't know, that might be something that's kind of specific to girls, that level of sort of close friendship followed by major betrayal. And I'm wondering if that was something that you experienced and how that made its way into the book.
Yes, I definitely did experience multiple times that ugly, ugly friendship breakup was so a part of my formative years. I do think in a way I actually asked my husband this question because I wasn't sure if this was something right. that was specific to girls or if guys go through it too. And I think they do go through it. It's quieter. There's less talking. And I think that's part of it. I think with the girls, you know, there are tears. There's a million little slights in the hallway, you know. And just, I think that it is part of that girl experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, too. And I wonder, although this didn't play a big role in the book, but, you know, when you and I were growing up, there weren't cell phones and social media was not a thing. And so, you know, that seems to me that kind of girl friendship breakup and betrayal now could be even amplified or made more public or more painful because of technology.
Yeah, I think it's a scarier world in regards to that in some ways now that you can't just go home from school and get away like you used to. It's mm-hmm. there. That social network is still right there. You know,
right in your pocket all the time.
Yeah, it's always there. I think it's a lot harder to step away mm-hmm. because kids grow up with it. They're so hooked into it that the idea of just leaving social media, you know, I don't want to talk to those people. I'm just going to not use my phone. It's very hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the book is it's never sort of specific about the time in which it's taking place, but it's contemporary.
It is.
And although there are lots of parts of the book that deal with kind of rumors and secrecy, and but you didn't really include that technology piece. Was that intentional or just that they didn't have phones? Was it a economic issue or sort of, because, you know, I think, again, with all of the rumors swirling around, there was no mention of like Facebook posts.
Yes. I did intentionally have Darcy not have a phone. A lot of the other kids in the book do. But I wanted to be sort of a statement about their economic standings, mm-hmm. that not literally everyone has a phone, though it seems like it. It was also a good way to kind of put Darcy a little apart from everyone else. The secrets she's keeping set her apart, and the fact that she doesn't have this constant mm-hmm. hook into, you know, the social world of her friends. I was hoping would kind of give her a little more detachment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that it worked. I'd like to open up the phone lines and invite listeners to call if you have questions for Jillian about the book or about writing more generally. The number is 1-866-625-9378. If you are local, you can call 469-0500, and that will get you right into the studio. So I'm wondering, have you been doing author events and with young people? Have you been reading at schools or libraries where teens have shown up?
Yes, I actually just spoke at Bucksport High School a couple days ago.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, I wish I had known.
Yes, it was a great experience. I was totally terrified, but the kids were great. They asked so many wonderful questions after the fact.
Oh,
so
good.
It was a really great experience. I was so glad they had me.
That's great. That's great. I just want to remind listeners that this is Bookworm, and we are speaking today with Jillian French, who is the author of Grit, plus other books, which we will mention when we get towards the end of the show. So what kinds of reactions are you getting from teens, and what kinds of questions did they have?
A lot of them really wanted to know more about the writing process. They really were kind of curious, you know, how do you create characters? You know, how do you make dialogue seem real? Mm-hmm. Where do you get inspiration? A lot of really good questions. They really blew me away with their questions. But it did seem
great.
Like, you know, writing is something that a lot of teens are interested in, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people wouldn't necessarily give them credit for.
That's great. So we have a caller. Lindy from Southwest Harbor is on the line. Good morning, Lindy.
Good morning. Oh, my God. I was just about ready to take my dog out. I'm so glad that I tuned in.
Oh,
I'm
so gonna, good.
I'm going to suggest the Southwest Harbor Library gets this book. It's great, and I just do want to make my comment, but I want to get the author's name once again.
Sure, yeah. So Jillian French is
the
author.
How do you spell Jillian?
G-I-L-L-I-A-N.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so thank you so much. I'm dealing with rebooting my life again and going over those early teenage years, and I'm also a writer, and you are bringing up some issues that I've tried not to deal with, you know, afraid that I was being a martyr about what it was like to be a lesbian as a teenager, and that secret of not telling anybody. And of course, everybody, all my girlfriends around me knew I was different and odd. And as soon as it was even slightly suspected I was lesbian, I was dropped from the circles of, you know, and I didn't have a boyfriend. So I got a boyfriend. In fact, he was the quarterback of the high school team. And all the girls were jealous of me, but I only got the boyfriend because I wanted to have status, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And boy, if you didn't have a boyfriend back in the 60s, you were left out. So enough about me, but I just want to thank you so much for writing this book. And I have a lot of young teenage friends that really like me. And teenage boys, they have a hard time too. And
yes.
So really, I'm going to tell the library to get this book.
Great.
And yeah. I just got goosebumps hearing you speak and you, the interviewer. What's your name?
My name is Brooke.
And you're on every...
Second Thursday of each month, okay. 10 o'clock. Yeah, okay. Thanks so much, Lindy. I'm okay. So glad you called and that the book is speaking to you. And if your library doesn't already have it, please do request that
okay,
they get a copy.
I will. I'm going to get a copy of it for myself. So much love to you both and all the teenagers in the world who are struggling today with social media. Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Lindy. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you so
Take
much
care.
For calling. Yeah, well, I mean, she really, even without having read the book, really does hit on it. It is hard
yes.
to be different.
Yes.
When you're a teen, it is hard to carry a secret and not feel like you really know what to do with that or how to get help. And, you know, I think the book really speaks to the importance of having lots of adults in teens' life that they feel they can approach. And in fact, one of the characters, and I'm sorry that I forgot to jot down his name, but he's the landlord who
yes.
owns the houses where both the girls live. And he's kind of a solid guy. He's a cool guy.
Yes.
So what made you insert him into their lives? And, he, you know, how do you think of him as sort of the role that he's playing with these kids?
Hunt was his
Hunt,
name.
Thank
and
you.
I wanted to have sort of a father figure since Darcy did not have a dad in her life. Her dad is actually dead. And so I wanted to have an example of a good principled man in this book. Who isn't necessarily, you know, father's knows best type of character.
Right.
I wanted him to be a little different. And so, that was why I put him in there. So she might be able to have somebody to go to who was male, because I think it's important to represent guys in a way that isn't negative. I think, you know, there is a lot of that out there. And I want it to be a feminist story with good men in it.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause we should say some of the men in the book are... not so good.
Yes, that is true.
Both adults and some of the teens.
Yeah.
And I love the way that Hunt quite literally shows up. You know, he's the landlord, so he comes by to repair things and, you know, to put fresh paint on the house and whatever. But also, he's just sort of a presence, a steady presence for Darcy especially. And I think that it was nice. I have to ask you, was there a sort of romantic tension there between Hunt and the girl's mom? Because it was hinted at. I don't know. What
yes.
did you think?
Yes, I did want there to be something there. And I wanted people to think there could be a possibility
yeah.
between those two.
Yeah.
Because I felt like the mom, she's a hard worker. She tries to be there for her kids. And I wanted her to have the chance to maybe get a little, you know, happiness out of life on her own, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Beyond her cigarettes.
Yeah.
Which she loves. And
yes.
her cigarettes are a highlight for her, for sure. Well, that's good because I was sort of hoping that maybe after the book ended, there was a sort of possible love affair there.
Yes. I wanted to leave that open. But it could happen.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. So one of the things that's going on in this book is that both Darcy and Nell have been nominated to participate in a pageant, like a beauty pageant, I
yes.
guess, that happens at the summer fair. And so that's a theme that kind of runs through the book. And I'm wondering why the pageant, which feels like a very kind of objectifying sort of old-fashioned ritual, although they still happen, and I know that many people participate them and don't experience them
yes.
in that sense. But as somebody who doesn't know much about the pageant world, I wonder why you had that bit in there and kind of what role it played in the story.
Yes, I wanted to put that in there as a way to kind of nail down that idea of different roles that women play. The pageant girl, I think, is such a, you know, a stereotype that's out there. And Darcy is so not that. And
right.
so I really wanted to kind of drop her into this situation and in hopes to sort of build tension where she sees herself, you know, surrounded by girls who are not like her. And she has very low self-esteem. And I wanted her to be in a situation where she's kind of got a role with the idea of putting herself on display mm-hmm. up in front of the entire town. And also her cousin Nell, who's also nominated, this is all she wants. She's been dreaming
right.
about it for years. And so, yeah, I wanted to kind of play off the differences of the two girls a little even more and then add the hopefully building tension as the pageant approaches throughout the course of the book. What's going to happen? Who's going to win?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was sort of what I was going for with that.
Mm-hmm. And I love that when Darcy, there's like a question and answer part of the pageant, which is probably typical. And when Darcy's on stage and they ask her, you know, what do you love about living in a small town? And her answer is, you know, I don't.
Yeah.
Basically, right? Because she's just going to tell the truth. You know,
yeah.
She is definitely not there to play by their rules necessarily.
Yes.
But, you know, I think that also, though, really hinted at what so many, I think, teenagers feel, whether they live in, you know, a small town in Maine or nearly anywhere else and maybe haven't left very often. I don't get the sense that her family was somebody who could take extravagant vacations.
Yes.
Is just that sense of, I got to get out of here. You know,
yes.
There's got to be more, right?
Yes.
And so was that your experience growing up? And did you get out of the town?
Oh, well, that was my experience growing up. It felt like, no way am I going to stay here. You know, I definitely, there's, you know, no chance that I would be living here in 10 years, you know. And, you know, I went to Maine. I went to UMaine, Orono, to get my degree. So that wasn't very far from home. But for me, you know, it was a bit of an escape.
Mm-hmm.
It was a larger town. And with the size of that campus, there were kids from all over the place. And so that was really
right.
cool. Really, the farthest that I have gone to live is southern Maine. I lived down mm-hmm. in Saco for 3 years. I have done a little bit of traveling around the country. I'm here and there. I've been to like Oregon and places like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really didn't stray too far. I kind of surprised myself with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, you know, as I grew, I could appreciate what makes a small town special as well as mm-hmm. seeing the more suffocating aspects. But I think, yes, when you're in high school, this is all you've known and you just want to get out. For the most part.
Yeah.
And
I think that's really a typical experience.
Yeah. And some people, you know, they go so far from their small towns, you know. And so I just think growing up in a small town is just it is a unique experience. It's mm-hmm. not the same as an urban area. And so it was fun to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So I just want to remind listeners that we are speaking with Jillian French. She is the author of Grit, and we are happy to take your calls. 1-866-625-9378 is the call-in number. You can also call locally 469-0500 if you have questions and would like to be on the air. So you said that you went to the University of Maine, and I would like to maybe just talk in the last few minutes that we've got about your process of writing, your history of writing, and did you study English or writing when you were an undergrad?
Yes, I majored in English. Orono doesn't have creative writing as a major there. You can have it as a concentration, so that was what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, one of my creative writing classes was with the wonderful, very talented Elaine Ford, who recently passed away.
Mm.
And she was a huge inspiration to me. She was one of the best teachers I ever had, and she taught me so much about writing in just one semester. She was just full of these little tidbits that she would just kind of toss them out there. And I was, you know, I was so desperate to be a writer. I was just scrambling for them, you know, and I tucked them away and I kept them with me. And I was so sorry to hear of her passing, but learning from her was a great experience.
Mm, that's wonderful. So you knew, it sounds like at a very young age, that you wanted to be a writer.
Yes. Yeah. Ever since I was a very young child, I can't really remember not knowing. It took time for me to come around to realizing I wanted to write for teens. But I knew it would be for young people.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just kind of was bullheaded about it and didn't get realistic when I should have. And so it was about a 17-year journey. And I got some short fiction out there early on and a way to get my name out there because I wasn't able to find publishers interested in the books I was writing, you know, when I was in high school. My ability just wasn't there yet. And mm-hmm. so I just sort of chipped away at it over the years. And definitely had times where I despaired and thought this is never going to happen. But and then last year things kind of came together. I first signed with Island Port Press mm-hmm. out of Yarmouth, which was a great experience. Has been dealing with them. That book, The Door to January, just came out in September.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you. And Grit, I signed with Harper Teen, and they were the ones who put out Grit, and I have my second book from them coming out May 1st, The Lies They Tell.
Excellent. And So talk a little bit more then about how that happened, because I think there's a lot of people who are writers and are very committed to the craft and really don't know how to get their work out there, how they might ever connect with a publisher, much less a publisher as big and important as Harper. So how did you do that? It's not an easy question, I'm sure.
It's funny. The way that I was able to connect with Island Port was they take a printed manuscript, the full manuscript, and you just snail mail it to them. It takes time, but, you know, it also takes time when you contact a publisher electronically, too, because they're also super backed up with a huge slush pile.
Yeah.
So it was very traditional with Island Port. With reaching HarperCollins, reaching one of the big five publishers is incredibly difficult, and really literary agents are the gatekeepers. These days, you got to get yourself an agent if you want to break through with a large publisher. And so after many years of querying, I was lucky enough to have an author friend pass the manuscript of Grit on to her agent, Alice Tasman of Jean Vinegar Agency out of New York City. And Alice loved it and got in touch with me. And so then...
That must have been a good day.
Oh, it was. It was incredible. It was just incredible. And I signed with her, and then she has all the connections there. It's that agent that has the connections and can get you in the door.
Yeah.
So she took the manuscript to auction, and HarperCollins ended up being just the right fit. My editor there, Rosemary Brosnan, is just phenomenal. She's just a wonderful person and so nice to work with.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So it also sounds like having, for you at least, having connections with other authors was an important way to kind of work your way into the industry.
Absolutely. It turned out to be the key to it. And it was hard for me because I am sort of an introvert and I don't really get myself out there much, especially, you know, I'm home with my young sons almost all the time. And, but I would definitely, if, you know, if someone was looking for advice on how to do that, look into your community's writing groups. Almost every community has one. They often meet at their local library. That's often a place. And if not, your librarian may be able to hook you up with one.
Right. I was going to say, you know, both librarians and bookstore owners are probably good resources for learning about authors in the area. And so do you work with a writing group, or have you in the past?
I don't now. It was something... I've had to connect with people just sort of through word of mouth for the most part. I have sat in on what was just a short-term writer's group, and that was really interesting. I love reading other people's stuff and seeing what they're doing. It's just fascinating. And it can be helpful, but not every writer. You know, not every writer finds that's the best way to go about it. But I would say give it a try if you never have, because it can be a way, if nothing else, to meet the people in your community that are also writing. And then if you end up, you know, just shooting emails back and forth, you know, that can work too.
Right, right. Just building those connections.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear, I'm always interested when I meet authors in hearing about kind of their own process of writing, and particularly since you have two young children, when do you write and how do you find time and how have you sort of carved that out in your life?
I used to just write during, this was when I just had my older son, right after he was born. I used to just write during my son's naps. these days, my husband is a stay-at-home dad, and so he provides a lot of that time. I write in the morning. I come down, tuck myself away for a few hours, and then we'll try to get a couple more hours in the afternoon while he's kind of got the boys. And also, I'm very lucky that my parents have always been so involved in my kids' lives, and they go over and visit with grandma a couple times a week, and so that's a little extra time. I'm just very lucky to have such a supportive family there.
And you have, when you say you tuck yourself away, so you have a particular place in your house, do you have an office or some kind of a space that you use?
I do have an office. Yeah, it's a little kind of a little nook, and I have my desk in there, and that's where I do it.
And so even before the show, we were talking a little bit about how you're working with your editor, and you mentioned even when you submitted your manuscript to Island Port Press.
Yes.
Yeah, that it was just a paper manuscript. So do you write on the computer, and how does all that work for you, and especially kind of the editing aspect of it for you?
I do it all on computer. I wish I had like an old Underwood that I typed on or something like, because I think that would be so cool. I really respect people who work that way. But I'm totally on the computer. And I rarely print out my manuscripts anymore. I used to. But as things have changed, when I was first started shopping my books around, back then it was unusual for you to do an e-query. Like, to email your query was very strange. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, now that's all anybody does. And so it has changed a lot over the years, just not so much on paper.
Yeah. You're right, though. The paper has the romance, but maybe not the most practical. Yeah. So we have just about 10 minutes left in the show. This is Bookworm. My name is Brooke, and very happy to be talking with Jillian French, who is the author of Grit and a couple of other books. There's still a few minutes left. If anyone would like to call in with a question, it's 1-866-625-9378. You can also call locally at 469-0500. So I wanted to get back to some of the reactions that you've had from young people and or their parents. You know, as we had kind of alluded to earlier, the book does have some pretty adult topics, including kind of, you know, sexuality, there's drinking, there's, I don't want to sort of give away the big end, but there's inappropriate relationships, I guess I would say, that's going on.
Yes.
And so what's the feedback that you've had from either young people or parents about that? Are they drawn to the book because of it? Has there been anybody who has said, you know, whoa, this is for young adults?
Yeah, a lot of the sort of more negative reactions I've seen have been on Goodreads, which is a dangerous place.
Don't look. Don't look.
Dangerous place for an author to go, and I don't go often anymore. But, you know, I think these days there are so many issue-driven YA novels out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is actually that sort of the ground where you go to see people putting themselves out there in regards to taking risks about what we can talk about with our teens.
Mm-hmm.
I have had a lot of just really positive reaction. People have just said, I love this. It was a page turner.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Darcy was such a good person, which to me, that really meant that the book worked, because I wanted to show you don't necessarily have to be morally perfect to be a good person.
Yeah.
And I think teens want honesty.
Yeah.
They want you to be forthright.
Mm-hmm.
They have really good BS detectors. And I think if you're trying to put on the sunshine and roses face, you know, they're going to not have any respect for the story or for you as the author. And so I really tried to cut through to the truths that I would have wanted to see there when I was that age.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think you did such a nice job with
Thank
it.
You.
So you did mention that you just had a new book. When I contacted you for the show and I had just read Grit, I think it was the same week that you're had another book coming out, which I didn't know. So tell us a little bit about The Door to January and what it's about.
Yeah, The Door to January. That one is a paranormal thriller. It's also set in rural Maine.
Oh, great.
Yes.
And I can't wait to read it.
I have a copy for you.
How wonderful. That's great.
That one deals with there's some ghosts and there's time travel. I tried to work that in with the rural Maine, which is interesting, and I'm curious to see how it works for people. But I'll find out. But that one is a little more plot driven, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But it also deals with some bullying issues that took place in the main character's past. And she's come back to her former hometown of Bernier, Maine, to face up to a lot of things. She's having a reoccurring nightmare involving a creepy old abandoned house on the edge of town. And she doesn't know what it's all about. And she wants to find out. So she and her cousin go there to do a ghost recording to see if they can get ghosts to speak to them.
Uh-huh.
But there's also some kids in town who were involved in a scary, what turned out to be fatal bullying incident that caused her family to move away.
Interesting.
So she's sort of trying to face down a lot of demons.
Mm-hmm. So she's an adult in the book and coming back to visit.
She's only 16. She's coming
okay.
back for the
Got
summer.
It.
Yeah, she
Got
has
it.
Summer job with at her aunt's diner. And so she's young, but she's trying to sort of, you know, meet it head on. And so.
Yeah. Interesting. And it sounds like it really picks up on a lot of topics that are very relevant right now when it comes to the world of young people. Certainly bullying, and even bullying that has extreme and unfortunate consequences, is something that has really been in the news.
Yeah, it certainly has. I was hoping that might draw teens in and see how do you deal with this after after it has affected your life so horribly. How do you come back from that?
And right.
It was an interesting question, I thought, and one that I really wanted to talk about.
And you have another book. You have been very busy, and another book coming out in the spring. So tell me about that, if there's much. Can you talk about it yet?
Yeah, I can give a little blurb. It comes out on May 1st. It's called The Lies They Tell. It's set in a Bar Harbor-like town. And like you had mentioned earlier, there were no summer people really talked about in Grit. This is about the summer people versus the locals.
Uh-huh.
Our main character works at the local country club.
And, okay, great.
There is sort of a dark cloud of mystery hanging over this town because there has been an unsolved murder in town, and it affects her family, and so she decides she's going to try and find out who did it by infiltrating this group of privileged summer boys.
Oh, whoa, it sounds fascinating. I can't wait to read it. And we have just a few minutes left, but we do have another caller
Excellent.
On the line. So Mitchell is calling from Fairfax, Virginia. Hi, Mitchell.
Hi. Well, it's Michelle, actually.
Michelle, I'm so
sorry.
Well, then I was close. Sorry about that.
In Bangor.
Welcome, Michelle.
I'm so excited. I've already ordered the book from Amazon.
Great. Great.
An area of my research in adolescent literacy is really what engages readers. And, of course, what I found, I taught an alternative high school for a number of years, and they got to choose their books. And Grit is the type of book that the students would choose.
Oh, great.
Because they could see issues reflected in their life. And it's like we need to get beyond, like, is this an okay book for them to read? I mean, oh, my Lord, what the average 16-year-old is facing nowadays. Yeah, they need to see themselves in literature.
Mm-hmm.
So this is outstanding. My only question right now is the title of the book is Grit. And of course, when you look up the book Grit, Angela Duckworth's research
yes.
on grit, how did your publishers decide to go with Grit as the title?
Well, I believe they chose it. It originally had a very long title. It was called Kissing James Dean at the Top of the Ferris Wheel.
And
it was, it was considered to be just too long. And they're looking at the trend these days in YA is the shorter titles right now. And so they decided, because the word grit is used a couple times in the manuscript and okay. The main character has grit, they decided to go with it. But I know I've heard a lot of people say that the other grit comes up first. So, yeah, it's a little unfortunate.
Yeah, and being a teacher and everything, we hear that so much. We're like, yeah, we've heard of Duckworth's research. But I will definitely promote your book and tell them that it is a YA novel.
Oh, thank you so much.
Great, Michelle. Thank you so much for calling. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So we just have a couple of minutes left, and my probably final question for you is how come young adult books? You know, you said you always thought you would write for young people, but how come YA?
Yes, that age group is just something, it's so near and dear to my heart. It was such a hard time. It was just a dark time for me, and many, many kids feel that way. And I knew I wanted to write for kids because that was what I was reading at the time as I was growing up. You know, of course, I was a kid, and those stories were hitting me so hard and really stayed with me. And I think when you're a teen, it's such a great escape to just get into a book and just get away from everything that is driving you insane, from school, family, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And once I was, you know, once I hit my 20s and looked back and said, man, I feel so much better than I did just a couple of years ago, then I knew I want to write for teens and try to give them that escape.
That's great. Well, I think you're nailing it. And I loved Grit. I'm very much looking forward to reading your next books. And thank you for coming on my show.
Thank you for having me, Brooke.
It's been a lot of fun. My name is Brooke Minner, and this is Bookworm. I'll be with you the second Thursday of each month at 10 a.m. And we'll be promoting authors in advance so you can read the book and give us a call. Thanks to John Greenman for working the board today. And as always, thank you for supporting your community radio station, WERU.
Support for WERU comes from our listeners and from the Strand Theater in Rockland,
presenting Seth Gleer on tour with guest Matt Nakoa live in concert on Friday, October 13th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and information at rocklandstrand.com or 594-0070.
We know a child's earliest experiences shape how they grow and learn. We know that healthy communities and a strong economy are based on a vibrant workforce. Investing in early childhood education has clear benefits for tomorrow's workforce and our state as a whole.